Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
We live or we die by the clock. That's how long we have. Two lines. One to the airport truck, one to the Moscow truck. Nikolai, tick-tock. 50 seconds!
When that clock hits zero, you send this truck. I don't care if Lenin himself comes out of his tomb with a priority package.
I absolutely, positively have to get to Memphis tonight.
We'll do our best.
Okay, I'll cancel Saturday.
No, don't. If I'm not here, I'm not.
Just so long as you're here New Year's Eve.
I will be here New Year's Eve, I promise.
2 more minutes! Thanks!
Hey! Oh, my. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
I love you.
I love you, too.
I'll be right back!
Fire! Engine one!
Hey there, my name is Blaine Waters, and this is Rewatchability, an Entertainment One podcast on the Entertainment One Podcast Network. With me, as always, is
Robert Larone.
And, oh no, JM's not with us this week.
No.
We're trading places, me and JM. I think we're kind of like pokeroo right now. I don't think he really...
Probably Ontario listeners know who pokeroo is.
For everyone else in the world, they're like...
He's a demon that lives on the Canadian soil. And
he's a lesson in gaslighting.
He really is. He gaslit all of us.
He did. As kids, it was a show where, you know, we should do that sometime.
There was a character named Pokeroo, and there was like two people on this kid's show, and one of them, Pokeroo, would always come while the other was away because they were in the fucking Pokeroo costume. I found that out like a week ago.
Along with Santa Claus. Yeah, and they'd be like, oh, where's Danny? And Pokeroo would be like, rrr.
Well, then
like,
Pokeroo would go off, and Danny would come back, and Sarah or whoever would be like, you just missed Pokeroo, and he'd be like, ah, god damn it!
Fuck, Sarah. Hold
that
him
guy
here
owes
next
me $100.
If you see him again, fucking pin him down. You call me.
Next time, use this.
But he's, it was really Danny though, or Sarah in the costume. Yeah. So, you know, they owed themselves $100.
But we're not talking about Pokeroo.
I think we should talk about it more, just in society. So this week, we are talking about Castaway. It's the beginning of summer over here, at least in Ontario.
You may be thinking about traveling. Don't do it.
But not because your plane could explode and you could wind up on a desert island for 4 years. Just, you could catch something. It might be bad. Get double vaxxed first.
Triple vaxxed if you can.
I mean, go with AZ, get Moderna, get Pfizer. We are mixing and matching in Ontario. Mm-hmm. I say everyone do it. Life is like a box of chocolates. That's the wrong Zemeckis movie.
Wrong Zemeckis.
Yeah. So, Rob, before we get into this, okay, I want to say thank you to our Patreons. Those are people that go to patreon.com/rewatchability, and they give us some money that we can buy coconuts with and other sharp objects to then survive on desert islands with. Now we don't do that.
We're island preppers.
We are. I wonder how all the pandemic preppers, like if preppers really, you know, survived the toilet paper turmoil.
I bet some of them had like a glorious week down in their bunkers.
They're like, see, Marjorie, see? Yeah, so thank you so much for going to patreon.com/rewatchability and giving some money to us there. You guys are
our Wilson.
Right. You give us a lot.
We talk to you.
And we talk to you and you don't respond. Yeah, so that's what this is. And if you want to support us but you don't have the money, you can just tell a friend about the podcast. That's nice. Just word of mouth. If you like it and they like movies, then maybe, just maybe, they'll like this.
Take the podcast, put it in an envelope, send it via FedEx to a friend. It'll get there in 7 to 9 days. And then you can share the magic of rewatchability.
Yeah. Yeah, we like media. We like the tactile media here at Rewatchability. So that's the announcements. Let's get into Castaway. Rob, this movie came out in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
When did you first see Castaway? Do you have any memories from it?
I saw at least most of it on the Movie Network, I think a few years after it came out, when it was playing around that time. I don't think that, you know, I mean, Tom Hanks, it's been a journey with Tom Hanks for all of us. You know, he started out as this like lanky sort of scamp who was like flailing his limbs everywhere. Mm-hmm. And
in
then,
the burbs, yeah.
And then he moved into our hearts in Forrest Gump, I guess, and other things like that. But there was that period, you know, where he was like winning all the Oscars, Apollo 13. And
Philadelphia.
Yeah, exactly. He was sort of ubiquitous. And then it came to a point where it was like, all right, Tom Hanks, why don't you give somebody else a shot? You know, you don't need to do these like giant movies all the time.
Make way for like someone like a Colin Hanks.
Or like, Chet Hayes.
Chet Hayes. He kind of was everywhere in the late 90s, early 2000s. And then he got into directing. So that's like, you know. He's been doing that.
What has he directed? Oh, I mean, other than...
That Thing You Do?
Yeah, okay. Other than that, okay.
And that Greyhound, I think he produced.
What's Greyhound? Is that about movie? The bus? The bus?
It's about...
planes.
It's about how the Greyhound bus went under in Canada. That's what it's about. It's about how northern communities are no longer getting medicines.
It's an issue that he's passionate about.
So, yeah. So, he was ubiquitous for a while. So, did you want to see this because of
that? I didn't want to see it. I was a little bit over Tom Hanks. And I would say, you know, I was over him before other people were. And yes, he is back. He has won our hearts with his typewriter collections. And that time that he got COVID and was like a good dude about it.
Yeah, that's nice.
You know, so I've come a whole 180 on Tom Hanks. I'm like ready to embrace him again. I was ready to like embrace Castaway because I don't really remember it being like super, super amazing. I think it was like one of those like, yeah, like whatever, you know, Tom Hanks is doing his thing and it's a big movie and, you know, it'll win some Oscars or something.
Right, yeah.
What about you, Blaine? When was the first time that you saw Castaway? Did you see it on a plane?
I didn't. Thank God I didn't see it on a plane. I did not. I saw this kind of in theaters. I wanted to see it. The trailers looked good. The trailer, I remember, I don't know if you remember, spoiled everything.
Right.
It like, gave us the ending.
Like the part where he's like... Go back to your family. We can't do this because it's obviously wrong. And I'm Tom Hanks. I don't do things like that.
Yeah. But let's make out for a little bit first.
Yeah.
No, it had those scenes in it. And you're like, why are you telling us the whole story? And in my reading, I found out.
Well, was it... Were they trying to market it as a romantic comedy?
No, they would have gotten Meg Ryan for that.
Oh, okay.
Helen Hunt wasn't a lot, though. So, no, I saw the trailer. I wanted to see it. I thought there might be more to it. Like, they weren't showing us everything, but there wasn't. So I was a little disappointed when I first saw it because I was like, oh, this is just...
like, he thought it was going to be, like, Lost or something? Like, right? Yeah, there's going to be others. That's not a thing that's a thing yet, but...
Yeah.
Trust me.
So I thought, like, you know, I was high off X-Files and stuff. Like, I thought there might be more mystery in this than was in the... or, like, more crazy survival things.
Oh, it's not crazy enough for you? The man's on a desert island eating only coconuts, and then like he tries to almost eat a gooey crab. That's not survival enough for you?
It just sounds like a bad episode of Anthony Bourdain.
That's true.
That's what it sounds like. So I didn't. I liked it. It got the imagination going, but I wanted it to do more when I was younger. So I was looking forward to rewatching it, and my wife had never seen it, so we watched it together. And yeah, we'll get into it. But Rob, do you want to run down the zany, crazy plot to this zany Tom Hanks movie? No, he stopped doing zany in the 80s.
It's a little bit zany.
It's a little bit. To this Tom Hanks movie.
He's like, oh, I'm on an island!
I like that impression. It's good.
But, okay, so... Tom Hanks, he plays, I think his name is Dave Castaway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm going to be pigeonholed.
No, wait, what is his real name? Do we even know at the beginning? Do they say it at the beginning?
It's like
Chuck Nolan.
Nolan. It's Christopher Nolan's brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I feel like they don't even say it. I mean, I could be wrong, but I feel like they don't even say it at the beginning, and then it's only like... almost after he comes home and, like, regains his identity, that it's like, oh, Chuck, Mr. Nolan, this way.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I heard Chuck at the beginning, mostly by his friend who keeps getting reminded of his dying
wife. They could have been
grounding
hamburgers.
Right, right, sure.
Right.
Yeah. What's that animal with the wood? Anyway. So he works at FedEx.
That's right. He is, like, I don't know, he probably has some sort of job, like, logistics...
That's it.
It is Czar because he's in Russia at the beginning. It actually starts with like a package being delivered, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's I think important too. Like this movie is basically a giant commercial for FedEx, except for, you know, their plane wrecks and most of their packages don't get delivered.
Right, they should have flown Qantas.
Flown Qantas. But yeah, his job is to make sure to travel to all these different shipping locations and make sure that they can all ship all the stuff that they need to ship on time. And he does this by making inspirational speeches about the nature of time and all of that stuff. And he also he's really friendly with everybody he works with. He knows everybody's first name. He's on a first name basis with everybody.
Yeah. Hey, Nikolai, come over here.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's befriended like these little Russian scamps who are delivering packages for them, child labor not being against the law in Russia. And yeah, he's just like delivering packages to and from the Kremlin in Russia, you know, before the deadline. I don't know what the deadline is, you know. Maybe the Soviet Union's coming down or something. I don't know. But...
Yeah, but he's like this little kid. We follow him like across Red Square. He like his truck breaks down.
It's kind of amazing. Like, I mean, it definitely gives this movie like a huge international scope at the beginning because you know, I mean, Russia is something that we only see in James Bond movies.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But he has a girlfriend, not a fiance, not a wife, who is Helen Hunt. And
some judgment there. All right.
Well, no. I'm just stating it because she says that, you know, the whole thing is that she's been married before and it wasn't pleasant. And he's kind of like a dick about it. They're having like a Christmas dinner with a whole bunch of people who I'm not sure are they her family or are they like the FedEx people or is she like the FedEx heiress?
I have no idea. This is what I was trying to figure out because everyone's there at the beginning. There's like 80 people in that goddamn room eating Christmas dinner. There's even kids in the background being background actors like at the kids' table. There's so many people packed into this this long table. It's like the table from Batman.
And they're all talking about shipping.
They're all talking about FedEx and like back in my day, we sorted on this table. It's like, yeah, because it's fucking huge. It probably has rollers on it underneath the turkey. And so I don't know who those people are because they don't show up at the end. There's no one that's like, ah, Chuck, I missed you. no one does that. There's the only people we see at the end are people that we haven't seen before and his best friend.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's very strange. But we're sort of led to understand that his life is sort of controlled by the whims of FedEx. He's a man who lives by the pager.
Yeah.
And, you know, he almost fetishizes this thing. I mean, it's a real side of the times object, the pager. Did you ever have a pager?
No. Did you?
No. I think our generation maybe just missed it unless you were selling drugs or something like that.
Yeah, I think the only person I knew with a pager was selling drugs, for sure.
But he even at one point gets Helen Hunt a pager, which they never get to use for reasons that are probably obvious, because pagers are useless.
Yeah, it's also, I don't know, I really like this part in terms of its kind of subtlety of relationship dynamics. Like, he gets her these hand towels, which don't get a woman hand towels. And then he also gets her the pager, which she's like, great, it's a pager, it has tones, he's like, it can vibrate too. And, like, I don't know, it just doesn't, it's not a good present. Like, she's trying to like it.
Right.
And then he pulls out this other present that she's still... that she's still not sure about. She doesn't want either.
Yeah.
She's told him.
Yeah, he's bad at gifts.
Yeah, he says he's bad at gifts, but it's one of those things that, like, you know, I don't know about you, but, like, in relationships that haven't worked out, just some things in those gifts have been like, oh, man, this is not a good, or, like, you don't know me as well as you think you do. Like, I don't know. So that's
somebody's worked for FedEx.
Yeah. So that's the feeling I got in the scene, but it was so subtle and great that I really liked it.
You know, that reminds me, I almost forgot I have one more present for you. Only this isn't an open-the-car kind of present. But like, say, hand towels, which were a joke, by the way.
I'm terrified.
Just take it and hold on to it, and you can open it on New Year's Eve. And I love you.
So he kisses Helen Hunt goodbye, gives her a Christmas present, you know, throws a ring at her, and...
Man, will you marry me? I just told you I didn't want to marry anyone. Think about it. All right, Tom Hanks.
Well, you know, the beginning of the movie is kind of a miracle in that it really makes you dislike Tom Hanks. He's, like, so dislikable. I mean, first of all, he works for this huge corporation, and he's, like, such a corporate dude, you know? Like, he's a company man through and through. He wears these terrible sweaters. He's, I mean, this is, like, a little bit fat phobic, but he's kind of chunky. And
yeah, but that's, like, I'm going to fight you on that as I lower myself off camera before you see me. No, just because, like, I mean, we need to see the transformation, right? So I understand why.
Right. But I also think, like, maybe it's a comment on the sort of person that he's supposed to be, like this sort of, like, middle management person, this soft person, you know?
Totally. Yeah. And like, yeah, Tom Hanks said in a doc, like a behind-the-scenes thing, he's like, this is a guy who's in his 40s that has just eaten and drank whatever he wants for the past 10 years, you know?
It's all going to hit him.
Yeah. So they do try to have, like, a save the cat moment where he does something really kind for another person. Mm-hmm. But it also seems a little, I don't know, it also seems a little tone deaf as well, because he's seen his best friend, his only friend in this, talk to a pilot on board this plane. And she's like, I'm sorry about your wife. And he's like, yeah, she has cancer. I don't want to really talk about it. And he's uncomfortable talking about it. And then Tom Hanks is like, hey, I have this doctor that I can give you the number for. He's like, thanks. Yeah, sure, maybe. But it seems like he's not. It seems like the script is trying to make him into a good guy by doing that. But it seems like his friend is still pretty uncomfortable with talking about it.
Mm-hmm. He just needs some time. Well, and also, like, friend, you know, I mean, like, they're friendly, you know, like, it's his work friend. But, like, Tom Hanks doesn't have any friends. His friends are the people that he meets on his journey who work for FedEx. Like, He knows everybody by name. He pals around with Al the pilot and all these other people. But when, I mean, spoiler
alert.
Well,
it's too fast. His life is too fast to make deep friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
He needs to, like, just know somebody's name and then forget it when he leaves town.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so he's going to fly wherever the hell it is. And, you know, so he's on the plane all buddy-buddy with Al the pilot and all of that stuff. And, you know, he goes to sleep and he wakes up and, hey, it's a bit bumpy. So, you know, he goes in there and he, you know, does his typical loud mouth thing. He's like, hey, makes a little joke. And they're like, now's not the fucking time. Because, yeah, it's a scary situation. There's all the turbulence. They can't see. There's a storm. They've lost radio contact. They tell Tom Hanks to just, like, you know, stand still. The guy gives him, like, a little floaty thing. And then, like, some of the, like, luggage or, you know, like, the big storage cases start, like, shifting in the plane, like, big blocks from, like, the Temple of Doom or something.
Yeah, and this is what I really like about Zemeckis' direction here, is that he just kind of holds on all these shots.
Mm-hmm.
It allows the space to, like, really build the tension. And so you're kind of going through it minute by minute with him, and it's pretty harrowing, especially, like, when he's in the bathroom, like, doing his thing, and then he just gets sucked out the door. It's like, there's some pretty jarring moments in it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And, yeah, one moment he's, like, he doesn't have a life vest. He just has, like, the floaty thing, which he could lose grip of. But he's set down this antique watch that Helen Hunt gave him with her picture in it. And so he has to, like, make the choice. Do I go and grab the watch or do I get this thing? And, you know, He makes his choice, and, you know,
he dives for the metaphor.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. But, yeah, so this plane, it fucking goes down. His buddy Al, he gets a head wound. He's, like, bleeding. Hanks gets sucked out. And he has, like, his little floaty thing turns into a raft. And so he sort of is in this raft. And, you know, you see, like, waves that are, like, hundreds of feet high. And he's just like a little bagel on the ocean. And somehow, miraculously, he just happens to wake up on shore. You know, and it's a beautiful, calm island. And he is unscathed.
Yeah, he doesn't have any broken bones. He doesn't have any, like, lacerations. Though he does get some on the island, but...
Oh, yeah.
It's... But then there are those things where, like, you know, there are people that, like, they crash in a plane and they're unscathed, and then Mr. Glass says that they've been trying to find them for a while, and...
It's Tom Hanks' origin story.
It's kind of unbelievable. You're completely right.
Yeah. But also, I mean, when it starts, he's on this island, and, you know, if you were stuck on an island, granted, the shock probably has to wear off. You're like, I didn't prepare my 5 discs to bring on a desert island. What a fool I was. But, I mean, you'd start to think, like, okay, survival mode. I'm going to need food, I'm going to need shelter, I'm going to need, like, to build a signal fire, right. You know.
You kind of try to think of that guy's name that had the hierarchy of needs, and you're like, was it Laszlo?
Mahler? Was it...
Mahler. Love that guy's hierarchies.
Good hierarchies.
Yeah.
But he sort of just lucks into some food right away, because he uses the raft as a shelter. It's half deflated now, and he's sleeping in the middle of the night, and he hears this dropping sound, and it's driving him crazy. Like, what is this sound? And, you know, what could it be on this island with all these palm trees? It's coconuts, Blaine.
And that's where my mind as a young man was like, oh my God, it's a smoke. No, it's just coconuts. It's just coconuts. But, you know, as I'm older, I'm like, oh yeah, that's terrifying. Like, he's terrified. He's on this, like, island alone. He almost died. The people he was with are all fucking dead. And he now has to contend with whatever is making that noise. And that's very scary. So I kind of felt that more this time around.
I get what they're trying to do. But for me, I mean, first things first, I would try to go and find these coconuts way before they started falling out of the tree on me, you know? Like,
right.
I feel like it's day three when he's finally like, huh, maybe I should eat something.
Or drink something. I don't even know if he was drinking anything in these times.
Yeah, he just stared out at the ocean for quite a while, which I guess is fair. I mean, you know.
Yeah, you're in shock.
Big day.
Or whatever.
Big day.
Yeah. But had a bad day.
That's what that song's about.
Yeah, there you go.
But the first things that he does instead of, like, you know, procuring food, procuring shelter, getting all that stuff, making a fire, all that stuff, the main thing to him is he's got to get these packages that have washed up because, stay with me, Blaine.
Yeah.
Because then he can open them up and use whatever is in there for supplies, mm-hmm. right? Just like rip them right open. You know, there's bound to be something that you can use. You're stuck on an island, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what he should do, but he only does that weeks later.
He doesn't do it.
For him, I think he's thinking he's going to be rescued right away.
Right.
Plane went down. He was in shock. He's not thinking about they're out of radio contact, all that stuff. He doesn't think about that until much later when the memories start coming back to him. I think for him, he's like, they know the plane went down. They're going to be searching for me. And I just have to hold out a couple of days on this island until they find me. And then when help doesn't come, he's like, oh, shit, I better open these packages. I better find out what's making those noises. I think beyond that, you know, it's a hotel to him before that.
Maybe this is why I don't work for FedEx, because the second the plane started, like, you know, getting a bit bumpy, I would have been like, shit, what's in here?
Maybe someone's, I don't know, given a parachute for a Christmas present or something.
You just don't know.
You don't know.
Might as well check. Yeah, also, he does see a boat in the distance, and he tries to, you know, wave for it and yell for it, but it's too far. And then he gets in his half raft, and he tries to sort of, like, paddle out there, but he can't get past this certain point. And he sort of finds out once he goes way up to the top of the mountain on the island that there is this, like, magical circle of waves that is, like, it's just this one little ring around the island that won't let anybody leave, presumably as part of a defense mechanism, you know, to keep the balance and whatever, good and evil, black and white, you know.
Right, yeah. It's also skipping through time, so that doesn't help. Yeah, it's, I kind of buy that, like, the waves are crashing up on shore.
I guess so. I kind of buy it, but also I kind of don't. I mean, just the way that it looked when he was, like, looking down at them, it just looked like there was just, like, one, like, inconvenient, like, little layer, you know? Just, like, one tricky spot that the island, you know, put there to get him.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, like, even in the ocean, waves aren't, like, that's a great surfing spot. Someone would have found that because waves just aren't that big. Like, I've been to very few islands in my life, but I was to some islands around that area, and the waves are definitely not that big.
Tell us about your vast island experience, Blaine. How many big waves did you surf?
I surfed a little bit. I was not great at it, and I got very, very sick. I realized that the place that I was surfing had, like, a little pipe that was putting sewage out into the where I was. So I think I got, like, horrible dysentery or something. It was really bad. So what I'm saying is that he should have been shitting a lot more in this movie. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, there was not enough of that. Actually, maybe there was. I don't think I'll ever be able to get the image of Tom Hanks, like, flicking sand over his poop out of my mind.
Why do we see Tom Hanks go to the bathroom so much? Like, The Green Mile, he's just, like, struggling to pee the entire movie.
That's one of his, like, shticks, you know? He, like, learned it in drama school, and then he's just, like, you know, he just loves doing, like, the pee mime thing. He does it in this. You know,
that's
when he's peeing
clown
out of the
character,
ocean.
Tom. Always go to the pee mine.
The guy who needs to
always
pee.
Always do that. Yeah. So he's trying to survive. he finally does get these coconuts open.
It is a bit hard. He has to, like, learn how to make tools. Like, he advances through several thousand years of human civilization in a matter of days.
Yeah, he, like, naps them. What do you call that? Is it napping where you
I think so,
sharpen the stone by striking it?
Yeah.
He gets the coconuts open. My wife was way ahead of him. She was like, you can't just throw them against the wall. You're going to lose all the water. Oh. So anyway, but then he's collecting some water, and that's all right. He's doing well there.
He starts to do all right. He also, like, learns how to fish and that stuff. And he's pretty resourceful. Like, his skills at logistics management or whatever the fuck he did for FedEx definitely come in handy. Or we're meant to think that they do. Because he also, like... You know, like, later when he builds the boat, he's, like, planning it all out. And, you know, he also, at one point, he sort of takes up residence in a cave. And he has, like, this complicated, like, calendar system. And he's all, you know, it's all about the time thing that he was into before.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, have you seen The Martian? It reminds me a lot of The Martian.
Me where
it's
too.
Like, I'm going to engineer the shit out of this. And Tom Cruise is like, I'm going to FedEx the shit out of this situation. He just crawls into a box and
mails
a post stamp. Yeah, exactly. Done.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he's kind of figuring that stuff out. But, you know, to do logistics, you run through processes. And so he's kind of doing that sort of thing. But it's also kind of fun to go with him on the ride of figuring these things out.
For sure, yeah. And it's also fun because sometimes he fucks up and hurts himself.
Right. But that's after he's opened all the packages so that when he's trying to make fire, he grabs the volleyball, puts his bloody handprint on it, and throws it away.
Yeah. And this becomes his companion, lover, friend, Wilson. Mm-hmm. And...
Like from Home Improvement.
Like from Home Improvement, because it's a Wilson brand.
Hey, you never see the lower half of Wilson. That's all I'm saying.
What?
Oh, in this movie.
Like the Home Improvement. You're still on that.
I'll always be. I'm living here for this podcast.
But like, okay, but... But the bloody handprint. Okay, first of all, that was a really bloody handprint. I don't think that he was bleeding that hard when he hit that volleyball.
The thing is, like, he gashes his hand, but I don't know. I've gashed my hand. I didn't bleed that much in a second. Like, it was, like, squirting out, and then he's fine later.
Second of all, blood doesn't stay red when exposed to oxygen.
Okay. This is getting creepy.
It's brown, you know.
All right.
You know, and that's all I have to say.
The arterial spray blade wouldn't really hit the rocks that way.
I've done the yarns.
There's more screaming when someone gets slashed, Blade. All right.
But the only thing keeping him going is the thought of his beloved Helen Hunt. I don't remember her character's name, but he has that, you know, the watch thing, and he keeps peering at it, and sometimes he, like, says her name out loud and stuff like that.
Helen.
Yeah. Helen Hunt. Oh, Kelly. Her name's Kelly. Kelly. Yeah. So eventually it skips a bunch of time, like 4 years.
Yeah.
And in this time, he's grown like a big Forrest Gump beard. He's gone blonde because it's true. They do have more fun. And and one day he finds like a quarter or half like of a porta potty washed up on the shore. And, you know, initially it doesn't seem very useful, but then he gets a brilliant idea and he decides that now he can sail out and, you know, get past that mysterious ring of waves like a video game.
Good thing Zemeckis showed us all that in the very first shot past the package shot, like in his home, it like pans down against like this sailing proficiency certificate that he has.
Oh,
he does the same thing. In a lot of movies where he just like pans down through all these photographs.
Turns out Marty McFly can sail too.
Yeah.
It's just all sailing certificates.
But yeah, so he uses that. He needs rope. He's talking to Wilson. Wilson is his bestie now. Mm-hmm. Wilson is responding to him. We don't hear it.
You didn't hear it?
And then one of my favorite little bits of storytelling is here where he's like, I know where we get rope, more rope. We need more rope. And he goes up and he like takes this dummy with a noose around his neck off a broken tree.
Do you have to keep bringing that up? Can't you just forget it? Huh? You were right. You were right. It was a good thing that we did a test because it wasn't going to be just a quick little snap. It would have landed on the rocks and broken my leg or my back or my neck. Boy, it was the only option I had at the time, though, okay? It was, what, a year ago? So let's just forget it.
Yeah,
and I like that. It tells a whole story. You never need to mention it again, right? You just leave that because it tells the story visually. We don't need to go back to it. Like in the end of the movie where he tells this whole big monologue about what we just saw. God damn it.
You know, I made that rope. I fashioned it into a noose. And that tree was supposed to be me. Tom Hanks. Yeah, no, he does. They should have left it alone.
I didn't even picture that from the like a thing from the movie that just felt like Tom Hanks telling like the sound guy this story.
He just had a rough time filming that.
What the fuck are you talking about, Tom? Hey, Bob, Zemi,
Bob, can't you just see Jimmy in this? Have you got those eyes to look less soulless yet? I want to go see Rita. I don't think Chet is turning out okay. I need to spend more time at home. If only there was a movie with that sort of message. But,
that
scene is, okay, that scene, I was a little bit confused by that scene. Because, I mean, I don't know, I mean, I only know a little bit about hanging, but I do know that you don't need to hang yourself off, like, a cliff. You don't need to go to the top of a mountain and then, like, build a noose. Also, I know a thing or two about throwing yourself off a mountain. That usually does the trick.
Wait, what are the two things you know about that?
It usually does the trick. And also, if it doesn't do the trick, then hopefully there's some Swedish villagers to come around with big hammers.
Jesus. Yeah, no, I mean, he could have dashed himself on rocks, he could have drowned himself, he could have...
There's so many ways to die.
Yeah. Yeah, but, yeah, you know, he says in that monologue that we didn't need that he wants to go on his own terms.
His own stupid terms.
Yeah. So he gets the rope, he fashions this raft together, he's done all this work on the tide, it's the time to go, and he uses the porta-potty like that extra sail in Waterworld that also wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he gets over that last hump.
Just that last hump.
And he then spends most of his time lying in the sun instead of underneath the porta-potty door.
Well, he's got to work on his tan.
And then...
when Kelly sees him, if he's like white as a ghost, she's going to be like, ick.
He's also working on his, like, you know, Temptation of Christ 2 thing, you know?
Yeah, that's maybe right. I was going to go Unabomber, but...
Nice.
Yeah.
But then there's a lot of whales.
There's a bunch of whales. I mean, he doesn't have a great time when he's floating out there because first, like, yeah, there's a storm and he loses the porta potty, so then he doesn't have any shelter. Then Wilson takes off. And he wants to save Wilson, but he can't. He can't save Wilson and hold on to his boat, so he lets Wilson go. But he's, like, so sad.
That's sad.
And he's like, Wilson! And he's like, I'm sorry!
Yeah, the I'm sorry hurt.
Yeah.
It really got to me.
I don't know.
You have nothing to be sorry for. It's a volleyball.
It's a volleyball, Tom.
But it should have been.
Good acting there.
Yeah.
And then for some reason he throws his oars away. He's just like, I don't need these anymore. I won't need to reach anything out of the water or, you know, maybe need to fend off sharks or something.
Signal above the horizon line. Yeah. I don't know. Anything.
But he's lucky because, yeah, he's just basically like lying out sunning himself and this big boat rolls up beside him and he's like, Smalley Pirates, I'll wait for the next one. No, he gets on the boat and he's saved.
I'll wait at least 12 years to film that. Yeah. And he's saved. And he goes back home and gets back together with Helen Hunt and everything's hunky-dory.
Yep. And, yeah, so trivia?
No, this is actually the part that I really like about the movie.
Oh, okay. You like the sad part. Right.
I love the
so
sad part.
He gets back and he's like, he's cleaned up a little bit. He's sort of like Forrest Gump in this part, you know. He's mm-hmm. like forgotten how to interact. He has this like, you know, weird like stare almost. Mm-hmm. And he's also very skinny again. So yeah, and you know, all the FedEx people, they have a big party for him, and they're all...
You know what's so cruel about it is that they're like, hey, have a lot of seafood. Here's a lot of seafood.
Yeah.
Like, that man doesn't want fish.
No.
That man wants the turf part of surf turf right now, okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, he doesn't have any crab legs, no. But they're going to have him be reunited with Helen Hunt, with Kelly, and at the airport, and he's waiting to see her, and you know, we know what's going to happen. I mean, also we see that she is married before he does, and she's married to Chris Noth, so you know, Mr. Big.
I think that's one of the that's a part of the
she
movie
went from
that
big
I...
to Mr. Big.
That's one part of the movie that I think just really fucked it. It screwed the pooch on this part, where, like, she faints in the kitchen, but then you see her husband and child. I was like, don't show that. Just have this guy come through the door, and he's like, hey, where's fucking Kelly? Where's my fiance? And then this guy can be like, well, first of all, she didn't say yes. And second of all...
She told me the story. Dude, like, why'd you go? It was Christmas Eve.
Yeah, you really fucked up, man. She also won the lottery the year after you left. We're millionaires now. So it's just like, it would have been so much better if he came through the door and we're like, who the fuck is this guy? And he's like, hey, Kelly can't see you. And you're like, who the fuck is this? And we find out with him. That would have been better. Anyway.
Yeah. I see your point.
Husband, she has kids. She can't see him. She's too upset.
But so, it kind of seems like, you know, like maybe he doesn't want her to see him. Like Chris Noth
the
is
husband?
Like, yeah, because you know when Tom Hanks looks out the window and sees them and sees Helen Hunt there, she's like kind of trying to go back, and Chris Noth is like, come on, let's just go. This is done. And,
oh, that's so interesting. I saw that a completely different way. I saw it that like she was like, I should go in there. I have to go in there. And he's like, no, honey. Like I know you. This is not good for you. Like, you know, you have to do it when you're ready. That's what I thought.
Wow. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, maybe I've just seen him in too many dick roles. Like, you know, good wife, you know.
Dick roles.
He's a cheater! Yeah, but then, you know, he goes to her place anyway.
I know!
He takes a taxi out there, and it's the middle of the night, and she sees his taxi coming, and she lets him in, and they talk. They talk for a really long time, and then
they bro out about sports.
Yeah,
they totally tuned out.
And she shows him his old truck or old car, which she still has. And they, you know, there's like a whole bunch of like, will they, won't they smooch? And of course they're going to smooch. But it's also like really gross because you're like, dude, the fucking kids are sleeping inside. Chris Noth is probably like awake in bed being like, she's down there with them. She's down there with them. And
yeah, I know. I know. He's probably playing some like violent video game trying to like forget what's happening.
But like, they, you know, he's about to leave, and then he comes back, or she, like, runs out to him, and then they do a bunch of smooching.
I always knew you were alive. I knew it. But everybody said I had to stop saying that I hadn't let you go. I love you. You're the love of my life.
I love you too, Kelly. More than you ever knew.
And then Chris Noth comes out and it gets violent. No, then, you know, she's like, will she leave with him? I mean, she can't leave with him. And, you know, he says, you have to go home. And because he knows that, you know, it's just a fantasy. It's just a fantasy they're pursuing. And so he leaves without her, and that's it. And then the last thing that he does, he fulfills his mission. He goes and delivers the one package that he didn't open, the one that had the waterproof matches, the scissors, the knife.
Yeah, that was the Super Bowl ad that came out.
The 50-foot. Was there a Super Bowl ad?
Yeah, the Super Bowl ad was like, he like goes up to the girl and hands her the package. He's like, hey, by the way, what was in there? And she's like, oh, just a satellite phone. And like, she goes on all that stuff. Yeah. And then when he's done his last duty, he puts a gun to his head. And
Yeah, he just like blows his brains out in the crossroads. Can you imagine?
Exactly. I wanted to go out on my own terms. I really did.
that would be hilarious. I bet, I mean, also the darkest thing Tom Hanks has ever done.
Yeah.
No, but, I mean, this package turns out it's going to a sexy lady.
Yeah.
A real hot mama.
Yeah, he might have another package for... No, I'm not going to...
But, yeah, he doesn't know because he's standing in the crossroads and he's looking around and it's like, you know, she's told him all the directions. Like, he can go to Canada. Could go to Canada. Why not go to Canada? Or he could go over there, or maybe he could go back where she was, you know, where that package is waiting for her. Maybe he could explain everything. And they seem to have a connection. Maybe that could be the next step in his life. Maybe he deserves this. Or maybe he just needs to, like, just run for a while. Just keep running. Or
from coast to coast. Just avoid the oceans.
And then that's it. Then we don't know. But, I mean, really, we know what he's going to do. He's going to go wherever the fuck FedEx sends him. We got to get you to Belize. They're sorting slow over there.
Can I take the train? No. So, yeah, so that's the movie. We're going to be right back with some trivia. And then a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. A lot of how this came about. So we'll be right back in 4 years.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, we're back. We're rewatching.
I'm so old now.
My bones.
But I'm really skinny, so that was good.
And I can throw a spear 40 feet into a fish.
It's impressive.
That I can't see because of refraction. So, yeah, so I have some trivia for you.
Okay,
here,
I'm ready. I hope it's survival trivia because I know how to survive.
So, okay. Like, survive what?
You know, just things in general.
I'm going to interrogate this a little bit more.
I've survived pretty much everything that I've encountered so far.
That's more than can be said about most people.
Yeah, bring it on.
Yeah. So, we'll go easy first. Oh, this is maybe a little hard. We don't know. Right. We don't know. This movie was such a success that they had a Castaway TV series. It then changed its name and became what TV series?
Survivor.
That'd be so good. I remember when they first came out with Survivor, I had a coach for this team that I was on, and he was trying to explain to everyone that, like, they're going to put people on an island and have them play games for food. And if they win the games, they get the food. And if they don't, they don't get the food. They starve. And I was like, they can't do that on TV.
Yeah, it's true. They made the first season sound like it was just Lord of the Flies, the reality show.
Yeah, exactly. So not Survivor.
What? Big Brother.
It wasn't a reality show.
Oh, Lost.
It was Lost.
Yes!
Yes. So they turned... The pitch was just this movie's plot as a TV show, and then it turned into Lost. Which, for the kid that saw that in 2000... is exactly what I wanted because I loved Lost. So I'm glad that happened.
That's amazing. I mean, this movie does feel a lot like the pilot episode of Lost. Basically, yeah except like nobody else survives.
Yeah, which is probably more accurate to a plane crash. So
less daddy issues.
Who did they have to get permission to use the island from?
I'm going to say the people who have inhabited it for millennia.
You'd be right. They had to get it from, it wasn't from the government or from anyone that really owned the island. It was from the people that lived there. And well, they owned it, but it was a sort of talking to the elders thing that the location manager had to do.
Oh, wow. I was being ironic. I was sure that they, you know.
No, there's surrounding islands.
They didn't displace any indigenous tribes or.
No, this one was uninhabited. It was untouched because it was kind of,
We've been saving this one for you, Tom Hanks.
The island was like a religious symbol for these people, or a cultural symbol for these people. And so they owned the surrounding islands, which you can see really clearly from ashore when they digitally removed. And there was about, 80 people that they had to get consent from to shoot on this island. So that the location manager, this sounds really fun, she went to each of them and had to do like the ceremony with all of them, where she like had to drink a lot of like their liquor with them, and she had to do that many times,
right? Wow.
To get permission. I was like, that's great, that's a good job right there.
Yeah.
So they got permission from those people. They went to the island. They had like a good meet and greet day. It's really funny because in the behind the scenes documentary, Tom Hanks is kind of a little more obsessed with who knows him where he goes than I would ever have pictured.
Hey, I'm Tom Hanks.
So he's like, I was told they don't know me here. So it's not, I don't know. I'll go and meet them.
I brought some old episodes of Bosom Buddies to show them. Really get them started on the early stuff.
And then same in Moscow, he was like, they say they're like reading a newspaper, and they're like, see, this is me with an Academy Award. They don't notice, or like a Golden Globe or whatever he had at the time. And he's like, this is me with an award, but they don't know who I am. So that's why they put the picture here, is make them know who I am here.
They did make a version of Big in Russia, but in that version, the boy grows into a big person, then he goes to the gulag.
It's
we can
really
make jokes about Russia now, right?
It's really
bad,
just the
right?
plot of Dr. Zhivago. That's all it is, really. So they did that. They shot this movie. Tom Hanks gained 40 pounds for the role. They shot this movie. And then they stopped filming for a year for Tom Hanks to lose all the weight.
Wow.
Lose the weight, Hanks. And then in the interim, they filmed, as we know, What Lies Beneath.
Right.
Out of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it was kind of not the best movie, because it was kind of, it was like, oh, I'll do this while I have time, I guess. And then they went back to the island.
Hank, you thin yet? Okay.
Let's go.
Action.
You're not thin enough. Get on the bike again. Put the garbage bags on him. It's like Rocky. So they went back and shot it out there again. So all those blonde curls were actually his real hair color and how he grew it out. Yeah, pretty cool stuff. You know, it seemed a lot more impressive to me that he did that before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And just like everyone did that.
No, when I was watching this movie, or even before, I was like, yeah, I lived Castaway between April and, August of last year.
I mean, just picture you like trying to get into a cereal box with a stone.
I couldn't even buy a volleyball to talk to.
I just had to talk to a screen with people on it. It was horrible.
It's not the same.
No.
Honestly,
no,
I prefer
handprints.
The volleyball.
Yeah. So then they went back and they filmed it. And to create the script of this. So the whole thing, Tom Hanks came up with this idea. This was his idea to pitch.
Really?
Yeah, so he was wondering, like, he was.
What if I go
this
on vacation on a deserted island, and maybe we can like make it a movie or something? You know,
he'll pay
for it, sell some tickets.
He talked to Adam Sandler. He's like, oh yeah,
how do you do it, Adam?
But he was watching something on FedEx and was like, yeah, those planes must crash. There's so many of them in the air. Like, what would happen if someone did that, and he always loved the cat, like the Castaway other stories, like Gilligan's Island and stuff. But he was like, what if like a modern man landed on the island and had to deal with these
modern Hanks?
A modern Hanks, the title of his biography. So, I mean, it's going to be hanky panky, right? It's got to be.
Could be. It could be. Or Hanks for the memories.
I like that. So then he brought it to a producer. The producer got William Boyles Jr. on board to write it. Though Tom Hanks knew William Boyles Jr. from before because he wrote what movie, Ron?
Is this a trivia question?
No.
Turner and
Hooch. Tom Hanks movie. It was, in fact, he only wrote the dog part to that movie. He wrote all the lines for the dog. No, Apollo 13.
Oh, Apollo 13. Okay.
Another kind of survival Hanks movie.
Yeah.
So, he, in order to write this movie, he went to the beach in California.
Where all the best writing's done.
And with his MacBook and a latte. No, he contacted one survival expert, but then the other people he contacted were like was like a prehistoric weapons expert and a prehistoric like Bronze Age diet expert or something. And they all were like, hey, this is how you like nap a stone, and they kind of taught him things how to survive.
Because there, of course, the character would have access to
exactly
these experts.
Well, for you know, he does it accidentally in the movie, so you can kind of forgive that.
He would have died.
He would have died. He would have died.
But also, how many lives are these like archaeology majors saving? You know, with their stone napping knowledge that they pass on.
I know, through this movie.
Yeah.
None. But none. Maybe.
Zero
maybe.
People.
And so when he was on this beach alone for a week, he was, you know, it was a private beach. No one else was there. The people were kind of watching him from afar, like Bear Grylls type thing. And then he was there alone and a volleyball washed up and he started talking to the volleyball. He called it Wilson. It was a piece of refuse that he loved.
Wow.
And so that's how Wilson got into the movie. That's how it happened.
Wow. It wasn't just product placement.
It wasn't.
Like the rest of the movie.
Like every day. Do you want a Dr. Pepper, sir? Thank you for this Dr. Pepper. Jesus Christ.
Refreshing.
So the last trivia question I have that is going to round out our kind of behind-the-scenes trivia question.
Okay.
Stuff
right.
is...
Okay.
This is all I could come up with, and we can kind of brainstorm.
Oh,
this,
my
but,
God.
But no, like... as answer to this question. How many times has Tom Hanks been rescued at sea?
Oh, God. I mean, yeah, okay. I mean, obviously, Captain Phillips.
Yeah.
And this one.
Castaway 2, yeah.
There's a Castaway 2?
No, Castaway as well. Okay. Yes, that's 2. It's called Lost.
I don't know. Wow, what are the other ones? Splash, probably?
Splash, yeah. I think the mermaid
Forrest
saves
Gump?
Him. No.
Well, he's on that shrimp boat for a while.
He's on the shrimp boat, but I think he saves Lieutenant Dan instead of Lieutenant Dan saving him.
Okay, Apollo 13.
But maybe...
Burbs!
Apollo 13.
The Burbs.
No, not the Burbs. Okay. Apollo 13 is when he gets rescued from the capsule.
Okay, yeah, okay, all right.
Joe versus the Volcano.
Okay. The Terminal?
Sully?
Oh, yeah, Sully.
Yeah.
He was Sully.
He was Sully Sullenberger.
Road and to then, Perdition?
No, I don't think so. And then I think
Catch
Greyhound.
Me If You Can?
I think Greyhound.
What is
well.
Greyhound? You keep saying this word.
It's about racing dogs. No, it's like this fucking movie where I think he directed it. This is the top-notch research we do on this podcast. No, it's like a war movie where he's in this boat.
Oh, okay. If you said it was a war movie, I would have
I think it comes out on like, or it came out on Apple TV or something.
Okay. I understand. Yeah. That's he needs a lot of rescuing.
He should not go to sea.
No, him and Matt Damon should just stay in places where they're easily accessible.
Yeah, exactly.
On land.
So, Rob. this movie,
mm.
would you call it exactly rewatchable for you?
I think mildly rewatchable. I mean, there's a lot of really good stuff about it. I mean, Zemeckis' style is great. It's great that he's able mm-hmm. to, like, show us these, like, huge situations and do it in such, like, a dynamic way. There's not too much annoying CG in this, but there's a little. I found that there were, like, those things that I mentioned, I've kind of brought me out of the movie, like, I don't know. I think that they could have. I think that they could have made his journey seem a little bit more organic than they did. But I think that, you know, it is a nice. I think it's a really cool movie in that it's basically just Tom Hanks hanging out for like 2 hours and just being there. And you know, he's a good actor. He's fun to be in a situation with. I think he has, like, a lot of really, you know, great human moments. But, yeah, and I guess the ending is also, like, I don't know. I guess it's, I don't know if it's good. I don't know if I like it or not, you know. It's kind of just mm-hmm. sad. Like, do you need to have this part where he hashes out the fact that he isn't going to be able to be with the person that, you know, whose thoughts of who... you know, saved his life.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that you could have just sort of, like, left it almost at the airport or, like, had, like, some sort of moment there that was, I don't know. I mean, maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. But, yeah, I mean, I think it is a good movie. I don't think it's my favorite of the Tom Hanks prestige pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think it's mostly rewatchable. What about you, Blaine?
Yeah, you know what? I was more impressed with this movie than I was when I was younger. I just liked the pace of it. I liked the script a lot. There were some things that were kind of weird, like, you know, his best friend's wife dies from cancer and he comes back from this island after 4 years and he's like, I'm sorry I wasn't there. Like, that's my fault. It's like, no, man, you had your own things going on. It's fine. Like,
yeah, it's kind of like fishing for pity. It's like, no, dude, yeah. You were on the island. Don't fucking worry about it, man. Just like, yeah, it's fine. Out. Like, I didn't even worry about it because I was worried about you. She was dying. It was just fine. You know, it's just like, oh, I hope that he's okay.
Yeah. And then, but there are other moments that I really, really love. Like the, you know, like the we buried you moment. And
well, I mean, I think the interesting thing about this movie is that it's about a man who, like, throws his life away for a company, and then the company puts their name on it. Like, it seems like, how can anybody, like, ship with FedEx now? They're going to send somebody to some other country on Christmas Eve instead of, like, being with their families? Like, fuck those guys. Yeah. It's not even that they don't deliver the parcels. It's just that they, you know, like... they make people work themselves to the point where they lose the things that they love? Is that what we're supposed to understand about this company?
Don't look into Amazon.
Yeah, right?
Don't do it.
Well, that's the other thing. This movie's also very relevant because right now in particular, when have we ever had more shipping, more delivery, more everything, right? And we don't think about what the human cost is of that, you know, or what... I mean, yeah, the human cost. I mean, it's not all people being stuck on islands, but it is, you know, people not spending time with their families or compromising the things that they want in their lives because they're in a bad situation,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, for a lot of people our age especially, we weren't able to be with our families, you know, throughout the pandemic. And so it's like, I don't know, it did really kind of hit a different way post-pandemic, which is not a thing because we're still in it.
Still in it.
But my mind isn't. My God, my mind is past.
I know. Don't you feel like? I mean, that's the dangerous thing, though. I mean, we don't want to slide back into it. Delta, you know, Delta style.
Yeah.
Delta P.
Yeah.
We don't want to get the Delta P.
Are you on? It doesn't matter. We can talk about that after. But
I'm getting my fourth dose. Yes.
Yeah. I got a dose just to put in soap that I can, like, use on my hands. Anyway. It feels like it's over because we're in Ontario right now getting a lot of vaccines. And so we're close to being over this. So,
but that doesn't mean it's over, and it can come back.
Totally, totally. But all that means to this, how it's germane to this conversation is just that, you know, looking. I think a lot of people realized over the pandemic that, like,
their
office
best
culture.
Is a volleyball.
Yeah, that, like, office culture is not kind of the thing that they want with their lives.
Right.
And if you can spend more time with your family, like, that's the purpose of all of this, is to, like, spend time with people
yeah.
that you love and that you want to see and have experiences that you want and not just work to keep working. So
yeah, and for the yeah. rest of us who don't have loved ones, there's always volleyballs. Well, son! I'm sorry.
So I think this is a very rewatchable movie.
Okay.
It was very enjoyable to watch all again. Right. And I think there's a lot of good good stuff just to, like, watch and see and learn from in this movie. So,
like, how to make a knife, or how to make an axe out of a figure skate.
How to make a really, really scary kids game with a volleyball that has a lot of blood on it.
Yeah.
You know, just throw it into their...
How do you use old VHS copies of Back to the Future to make a raft? There should have been a scene. There should have been a scene where, like, all the VHSs were, like, Robert Zemeckis movies. He's like, oh, this one's not very good. Soulless eyes.
So that's rewatchability this week. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you.
And we will be back very, very soon with another old movie that we see if it's, you know, if it's rewatchable. So in the meantime, you can go to rewatchability.com and check out all our old back catalog. If you like this one and you're tuning in for the first time, you can go to social media and search the name of this podcast and you will find us. You can talk to us there. If you have $3-$5 a month that you think you don't need, you can throw it to us at patreon.com/rewatchability. But if you need it, keep it, man. Keep that money.
Yeah.
Spend it on a pocket knife that you have on you and just not on your keychain that you give your wife in the car.
FedEx somebody something nice.
Sure. Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, put in some, like, yeah, some first aid supplies just in case.
Or use your National Post Service, because they're real heroes, actually. So, and in the meantime, you know, don't go on any planes. Just wait. Just fucking wait.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.